Good evening, friends. As was announced, the topic of today's lecture is Man, a reason for reason A or for an angel. And what is the choice? Now, why do we consider from time to time this subject of the nature of man? We find that almost a few alternate Sunday lectures, somewhere or the other, since we are dealing with man, the nature of man is always taken into consideration. Because understanding of the true nature of man will be able to help us to solve not only psychological problems, but social, economic, political, particularly social problems, at the individual level, as well as collective level. And that's why people have always, I want any reformist or anybody to come on the scene in trying to help human society, will have to keep in mind the nature of man. Even the present advertisement people who are in the business of advertisements, they also consider the psychology of human nature and manipulate human mind in a way in which they could promote their goods. So practically in every sphere of life, whether it is interpersonal relationships or whether at the higher level, whether in the office, wherever you go, you find that you will have to understand human mind or human nature. In other words, psychology of man. Well, the word psychology means actually originally it was defined as the science of the soul. And Madame Vygotsky humorously says that the present psychology is the science of the soul minus the soul. Because nowhere you find the word soul and nowhere the word evil is also mentioned in the textbooks of psychology. They will say abnormal behavior, pathology of the behavior, pathological behavior, psychopathology, all those jarring words are used, but the word evil, they direct it, because they think it is a word connotation with religious concepts, good and evil and so on. So that is a part. So psychology is a rather like conventional psychology, but that is what is known as ancient psychology, about which we are going to speak largely, and also lately, that is what is called humanistic psychology, Rick Fromm and others, about which I will speak. So now coming to this, psychology, of course, as we said, this usually has two parts, the normal and the abnormal psychology, and study of human behavior. Now, to understand human nature, as we said, is necessary, as one place HPB says, that all good and evil things in humanity have the roots in human character. And this human character is governed and guided by human nature itself. That is the way a human being conducts his life. And therefore, the nature of his mind. So really, the conditions in which we are now situated is a reflection of the psychic atmosphere of that human society. If there is too much violence in our society, it is because the whole psychic atmosphere of that city or state or that area, or even within a family, that atmosphere is vitiated by that particular color. So in other words, there is such a thing as a psychic atmosphere, which can influence us, which can impinge on us, and which can come out of us and pollute others. Literally, it is possible to pollute other people's mind by the thinking, the way we keep our thinking, either on the proper side, or an impact. So one good and evil things in humanity, what the human condition, physically, psychical, social, economical, political, all of these are various compartments can be understood. But based on that, the quality of the life of that person, not the quantity, not what is called the, what the economist called it, there is some special word for it, you see, which tells the measure of the economic progress. The quality of their life. And the quality of their life depends upon the quality of man that constitute that. Children need the help of our society, the help of individual, as well as our society, depends upon our understanding of it. So ultimately it comes to this, that we must take knowledge. Knowledge, true knowledge can send them. And as I said, modern psychology has its own perception about human beings. And therefore this is it is, that the reason aim or the fallen and injured are the two various opposite concepts. It's what happened in the last century, earlier to that, which is 18th, 19th century. This was a conflict between religion and science. On this issue, whether the man has come down from him or whether he has fallen down from heaven and become a fallen angel. Now, this is a kind of a view. It was taken up and therefore a lot of debate for months and years together took place. And of course, ultimately now it is more or less settled down. Though there is not yet compromise on that issue, we shall look upon that very well. And another reason why we take up this subject is that the very third object of our theosophical movement is to investigate into the laws, the living laws, unknown laws governing the evolution of nature and of man. And the evolution of man, and at the same time, the psychic and spiritual powers latent in man, the study of them. This is the Oriental psychology, which considers the latent powers in man. So in view of this, we shall have to consider this, the two opposite camps. And then there is going to be a third camp. Now, of course, scientific view is, as we all know, the biological scientists in particular think that we have come down from ape, and there may be a little missing link about which they are doing. So they will not definitely tell you that between ape and man there is some kind of link. And this subject we are not going to lead into at all. So this biological evolution on one side, and the churchian view that man was made perfect in the image of God. He was almost angel-like, but he had fallen. And it is the fall of Adam, the fall of man, created the first sin, so he is born a sinner. Therefore, all the abnormalities you find in man is because of the first forefather who sinned, actually. And therefore, he is supposed to have fallen in. And the amazing part is that God breathed life into the nostril of the man, human body, human form. And a new soul is endowed thereby in him. So every newborn child is a new soul sent by God. This is the churchian view, the view of the Indian science. Juxtaposed between the two is the ancient wisdom, which says that man, of course, is a evolving being. He's not a creature, he is a being. And when we say being, there is some element of life and consciousness. Consciousness altogether at a completely different dimension than that can be found in animal kingdom. A dimension which is of an extremely advanced kind. You can, the most brilliant animal can never compare with even an ordinary human being as far as intellect is concerned. So now, this position that man is an evolving being. And he goes one step further and he says that actually man is an unfolding God. This is putting a man at a much higher position. But this at the core, nothing less than a God-like being. And that he is unfolding himself, although he is not fully shining forth. But the God-like being that is in him is trying to shine forth, is appearing, is evolving itself to shine. So to that extent, the third position, as we said, is an unfolding God and not a fallen angel. And that is because the very origin of man, as Russell in his speech says, defining humanity, that humanity is a great emanation, variation coming from streams of humanity, from divinity, that we have come down from the higher source, the divine source, as rays. And you went from the sun, the rays come. And on his return path. Of course, that's a long story of returning back. But that coming down, this is the most important part. That coming down is called involution, not evolution. This is of course the part of the evolutionary stream. But in that sense, it is called involution because that spirit in man has a real spiritual spark, the unit itself, each individual unit of life, getting itself involved into matter. And more and more as it is involved, the matter also gets more and more condensed. A stage is reached where it is become concrete, and then it becomes the matter of the kind that we now see, concrete matter, what is called the mineral matter. And from there onwards, of course, the evolution is there, from animal kingdom, mineral to vegetable to animal, and then comes the ape, as according to biologists. And from that, the ape has been refined into a human form. And how? Nobody understands that. Nobody explains that also. Now, this concept that man is potentially divine, you have to keep that in mind constantly, for the simple reason that the dignity that you give to man, like the nation Shanta, they talk about the dignity of man. Is it because he is a very brilliant intellectual being, or is it because he is walking here on earth? What is called Homo erectus. Homo erectus, just because he walks on his 2 feet. There says he is also walking, but that is bent, and he is using his hand. Learn to use his hand, and just become brilliant. It's not enough there. Actually, if you go to see, the most intelligent animals, and the large animals, like the ape, like the elephant, like the horse, like the camel, they are very intelligent animals. But compared to the body weight, their brain is ratio wise, is very small. Compared to the newborn baby, the weight of the head, the weight of the brain of the newborn baby is so high and so ratio wise compared to the weight of the body. In that sense, the brain is a very large quantity. Because the brain is ready, it is made ready to receive the light of human consciousness. Or to express human consciousness. So the human being is out, immeasurably superior to animal kingdom. Not that we are trying to degrade animal, but that animal is a species apart, a kingdom apart. And that human being does not stop at being human. This is another aspect of evolution. As we just said, that as we are talking about the evolution, that once he becomes a man, a thinking man, how does he become a thinking man? Just because the brain was given to him? Even then, nature, they say, unaided fails. Purely a brain man is not yet ready to build up a human. So that you do come across a small, skull, human mind, human bodies. But the kind of human mind that was there in him was something which was actually lighter by the advent of coming down of what is known as the Agnishvaka Pithis. This is an ancient science, that the formation of man depends upon the great Yajadas, or what was Amesha's painter, the great cosmic forces, intelligent forces. They participate in the building of the temple called man. In their participation, not only the physical form also was given the right proper form, which is ready to receive that light. Otherwise the brain can burst if the brain is not ready to receive spiritual light. And at the same time, the inner mind, which is awakened mind, which is ready to receive light from inside, from within it. Because as you said, the starting point was the spark of divinity. And that spark has not died out. So the man in his true nature is triple. The spiritual content is the silent beginning at the core of his being. Then he uses both his mind consciousness as well as his physical consciousness as his instruments. So the what you see on the surface are mere instruments. So the external man is merely an instrument of the inner real man. So the whole life of man is actually the life of the inner man. What we see, the outer man, his own biology, his own biodata, his own self-image, all those things. True, that's his own place, it has no value. But the true value, as you said, the true dignity of man comes because of this at core, at the true center of his being, is a spiritual entity. If we accept that, then we can proceed further. If you reject it, there is no meaning in the rest of the lecture. Now, this coming to that, you see, during this course of evolution, this man, the entity called the human soul, was receptive to impressions. So that he received impressions while it was passing through the mineral kingdom, to vegetable kingdom, to animal kingdom, and the impressions were not lost. And therefore the animal qualities, the animal tendencies are also impressed on him. Therefore man has in him the animal-like qualities in him, just as he has also got the human-like qualities in him. So that when we say human-like, then Jaran, as I said, S.P.D. says, that man, if he is truly human, the act of generosity, charity, justice and generosity comes naturally to man, spontaneously to man. That is his true nature. A true human being has to be generous, has to be kind, has to be considerate, has to be just. It comes to him naturally. And particularly if you see children playing, there is some sense of justice and fair play even among children. Even though when they quarrel, they will assert their right out of say, it is not just, no, you are unjust to me. They will use the word justice. So the sense of justice, the sense of fair play is inborn in animal. It is not that in most intelligent animal. Animal instinctively loves, animal instinctively cares, animal instinctively can become friendly, yes, true. It can be very much like sometimes we are superior to unpleasant human beings. But even at best, it cannot compare with the quality of the man that the man possesses at the core of his being. Now, I think therefore we will go to the very first reading, because then we can understand a little better. First reading says, a man taken individually or as a whole, correct? There clearly exists level constitution, that is higher and the lower. Two great tides of emotions, in bracket impulses, sweep through his nature. Two great forces guide his life. The one makes him an animal and the other makes him a God. This is called from what is known as through the gates of gold. And later further it adds that the God in man, degraded, is a thing unspeakable in his infamous power of production. If you become degraded, the God when you become degraded, you become unspeakably low. But the animal in man, when elevated, is a thing unimaginable in his great powers of service and of strength. So it is possible that the animal in man, the fruits, the animal energy in man, what is called the pushata, the virya in man, can be, you might say, exploited, can be utilized, so that the great power of service and strength can be utilized. On the other hand, to prevent that the soul in man to get degraded, he can be worse than an animal, and we all know about it. The other quotation also says, manas, or mind, is dual. Lunar in his lower and solar in his upper portion, says a commentary, that is ancient commentary. That is to say, attracted in his alert aspect towards buddhi, and in his lower aspect descends into and listens to the voice of the animal soul, full of selfish and sensuous desires. In other words, the neck of fire. Our mind, and we all have noticed it, that we all have certain tendencies, upward moving tendencies, what is called the heaven aspiring. That there is natural impulse towards life, towards beauty, towards truth, towards goodness, towards love, towards friendship. So all that is really good, all good things of life. Human beings wants to improve himself. Even a caveman, he wants to put colors, he wants to put designs, he wants to decorate it, he wants to refine it, he wants to improve himself. Even the most abject human being staying in the caves, a cave, this is a human tendency to improve himself. Beautiful. So that is that in him. And yet it is possible for him to fall so low, simply because there is an animal element in him. And that is his worst end. So, the buddhi telling, now the word buddhi, it is called also the discriminating term. The man is endowed with what is known as Viveka Bhakti. Most religions speak about the universe and it is called Brahmana, the higher quality of the mind, which is there in the higher regions of the mind. Every human mind has the higher regions and its lower regions. Sometimes we notice that higher regions, and about which we shall soon speak, the evidence, the proof that there is in us the spark, that is in us the higher moving of tendencies. As we just said, that impulsively we can rise above obstacles of life, impulsively we rise above our lower nature and stretch up our hand in friendship, in consideration, in care. That comes to us naturally, spontaneously, if we permit it. But otherwise, if we keep ourselves involved with our animal nature, that is, animal nature doesn't mean the kind of animal we talk about, not the kicking donkey. When we say animal means animalism, a kind of a lustful tendencies. It's a kind of a degrading tendencies. Can't describe this, you see, we all know about it. The simple word is self-centeredness. The whole problem arises because man has in him the aham, the self-consciousness. He is aware of himself as somebody. So he has his own self-image and he wants to record his self-image. He even worships his self-image. And in so doing, expects everybody else to respect him. And when that is frustrated, you can imagine the conflicts. Most of the human conflicts arising out of that ego-sensitive human nature. Human being wants to be petted, to be recognized, to be known as somebody. I am somebody. So all these conflicts of me and mine, right from childhood. You see children bawling, this is mine, this is me. My section, my thought. So this I, me and me, we are grown up babies sometimes. We are not left behind our toys. Of course, while we are playing with toys, we have toys, but now we are playing with big toys. We have got big car and computers and all these are bigger toys we are playing with them. And our family set up, our big phone and the shining thing, all this. So, there are human beings we are playing with toys also. So we are not yet mature, spiritually speaking. So again, this is how it is that we would not be better than any person. The difference between man and animal is just now said what? That man is an animal come, the higher mind come, the divine spark. Three things. Animal nature meaning, the intellectual faculty which is much above animal, and then the Buddhi faculty which comes from above, from the light above. The Bahumana comes from the higher source. So this higher mind with which the man is endowed, if it is not used by latent and it is not consulted from time to time, it gets atrophied. Because most of the time we live with our external mind, with our brain mind, what is called the brain mind. The mind which works through our intellectual faculties. So the brain mind usurps much of the time of our day and asserts itself in seeking his own salvation, seeking his own pleasures also. And in his own self-satisfaction. And the third reading, of course, is also this. What reading the third one? It is our mind, our tempter and redeemer. So that our mind is both our friend and our enemy. It is a tempter and a redeemer. Our intelligent liberator and savior from pure animalism. It can also be a savior from animalism. But then without this principle, and this principle is a gift from the divine. He says, what is it? It is an emanation from the very essence of the divine principle called Mahat, which radiates from the divine mind. So from the divine mind, the Mahat, the world, the intelligence of the world, the universe, and then out of that each human being is endowed with that spiritual mind. Without that, we will be surely no better than animals. But thanks to this, we are head and shoulder above animals. That is not the case, saying that we should look down upon animal, nor be too proud of being human. Because to be human is to be kind, to be human is to be conscious, to be human is to be aware of being human. So the dignity of man comes when he is aware of not only himself but other fellow human beings. So we have all come from the one in the same stream. That whole stream of you, and you are all drops in that ocean of life. Otherwise we are no better than animals. And no wonder, today being the birth anniversary of Guru Nanak, we would like to refer to his words. See, today being the birth anniversary of Guru Nanak, it's a very great and holy day, full moon day. He talks about human beings and compare them to animals. The lust in the fish, the hissing sound in the snakes, the sense of smell in the bee. See, there are various senses. Lust in the fish, hissing sound in the snakes, sense of smell in the bee, the passion for life in the moth, the elephant's love for tender touch. All these become causes for their perishing. It will tempt them to their destruction sometimes, at last, and at last it is. But animals have one prominent sense with which they seek pleasure. At least they have got one prominent sense. As I said, sound of the snake, smell of the bee, light of the moth, and so on. But man has five senses, and that leads him away. So man has got so many senses that which tickles him, which gives him kind of a tickling pleasure. And that is bad. So here, for once and for all, Guru Nanak never degrades human being. He never speaks low of human being. Whenever a low man comes to him, he still tells him, please look within, you are God, you are a child of light. He always points out to the light. So our job is not to look human being as animal being, but as a being of light. And therefore, when we say namaste to each other, when we say, I bow before you, what are we bowing before? We are bowing before the light in you, the man in you, the real man in you, the permanent entity in you, which is undying, which is an eternal entity, which has come from the high souls and immortal souls, and therefore he has to be immortal. And what is it? On his return path, that he is an emanation from the unity, but on his return path now. He has reached the middle point in evolution. Now he is on his way upwards. And unfortunately, according to the timetable, he is far behind. We should have been much higher up now today. Today, human beings should have been in this fifth race. Humanity should have been much, much higher. But we are now a little behind the schedule, behind the timetable, and one day we have to work hard or suffer. Out of through sheer suffering, we have to push our evolution. And it is possible to become God-man, God-like beings at the end of evolution. So, and then he says, describing the human body. The body, know this is a temple for him, the Lord of peace eternal. The body is actually a temple. The heart of man is the abode of his light. So the image of man is that he is a temple, and that we are we going to degrade that temple and making a house of scoundrels or gamblers or drunkards, kind of human form that is given to us, a very precious human form. And are we going to degrade it, use it for vile purposes, by drinking, by smoking, by overdoing it, and so on, so on, in a very small way. Overeating, overdrinking, overtalking. A little small animal tendencies in us. And as I just said, we are still grown up children. So this is it that in passing about Guru Nanak. So coming once again to our talk, the difference as we just said between animal and man is that man is an animal, but because of the higher region of his mind, is capable of discrimination. And it's this faculty of discrimination, he's able, that is where the moral element comes in. It is man alone who is given the freedom to choose for himself, for whatever he likes. Rabindranath Tagore says, he thinks two things very beautifully. He says, man is the only creature, he calls God a great artist. That on a screen he keeps on painting pictures and pictures after pictures and beautiful pictures. And with all the background, Human beings, he creates a picture of a human being, are shining beings who are aware of their artist. The pictures of animals, except that they are not aware of the creator. But a human creature on the screen or on that canvas is the one creature who is aware of who the creator is. This is the beauty of Ravindranath's poetic approach. And another place he says that when the light is awakened in us, we'll be able to see the sparks in everybody and everywhere. In fact, he did have a momentary experience of this kind. He said that Ravindranath Tagore, that for 3 days and 3 nights, he was able to see the bright light everywhere, light everywhere. And was able to see that the whole thing is pervaded by light and shining more centrally in human beings. This is a kind of mystical experience in Ravindranath Tagore of one place, poetically describes. So, human being does not so outstandingly superior. So in that sense, now, as you said, between this immortal entity and the animal man, there is that link called the mind. And that the mind is dual, as we have just expressed, that it is turning towards the earthliness, towards your own personal concerns, involvement with his own materiality. And either, or when permitted to go a little higher. Sometimes he is caught up by joy. You see, it is called surprised by joy. Sometimes when you see a thing of beauty, say a thing of sunset. And one day I experienced that the moon and the star, there were two human stars, what are known as the Jupiter and Mars, and the moon, juxtaposed in this triangular position. Just looking at it, something happens to an individual. It's three, spontaneously, without knowing why. So this awakening that takes place in them should be encouraged. Because it is here that is an element of spirituality in man. This is the proof. This is the proof that man can respond. Man does respond. And that if we allow that response to take place from time to time, we are exercising, we are allowing the inner exercise to grow stronger in us, that we now come closer to the greatness of man. So the greatness of man is centered around his mind. That there is a higher mind and there is a lower. The lower mind is very intelligent, very clear, no doubt about that. Very strongly logical, brilliant, rational, and it's an asset. It's an asset which can be utilized for the good of others. It's an asset, physically maybe a weakling, compared to giant animals, human beings are weaklings. In fact, in the course of evolution, there were giant animals. Of course, there were giant human beings also. But giant human beings survived all the cataclysms of nature. The giant animals perish. Human beings, using his intelligence, managed to save himself. Because he migrated. He knew when to migrate. He had an innate instinct, animal had an instinct to know how to migrate. But human beings not only knew how to migrate, but where to migrate. Not blindly, where to migrate. Now this kind of knowledge, this kind of intuitive knowledge is endowed in man. And that is why human beings survive. In that sense, human being is called the crown piece of evolution. We are at the peak of evolution. We are not merely presenting for nothing. That our evolutionist thing comes up on a pyramid, and right now he has come to be a man. And he doesn't stop there. The evolution doesn't stop there. It has to go further. Why not? Why should evolution start at human level? This is the question you should ask the evolutionist. He said, all right, man, so what? Now what? And here was what is called the humanistic psychology is coming into picture. The humanistic psychology, like Eric Fromm, they keep telling us that man has in him latent powers and potentialities waiting to unfold. It is when encouraged to unfold that the man can exercise his beauty. A child may have got a little poetic tendency, a poetic artistic tendency, or tendency to speak beautifully or courageously. But then this quality is encouraged. You are a very vivid example of child. Encourage and direct it to the right direction. It can shine forth. So man has in him tremendous great powers awaiting to unfold. Why? Because that little spark in him wants him to become really godlike man. And that faculties are there waiting for him. They are like the seeds. And that, of course, to that extent, those seeds require the proper soil. Unfortunately, the soil that we have inherited, in that sense, we are all gardeners. In the sense of being a gardener, few seeds are given to us and the soil is given to us. The soil is the conditions in which we are born. The seeds are the temperament and the quality of character with which we are born. The present human being is not the fresh human soul created, but that he has a long path. He has passed through various human, various forms of kingdoms and now various human forms. So having passed through so many human forms, he has gathered experiences. Those experiences are not lost. They are called his own skandhas, his own tendencies of temperament and of character. So these temperaments and character are there, imprinted on him, and they are waiting. We may have been a great musician, or a great mathematician, a great scientist, or something of the kind, but it was cut off because we were not able to pursue that hobby or pursue that faculty. But now, given an opportunity, it can shine. And opportunity is afforded, that is called the environment or the soul. So each child is born in a particular situation where he can unfold himself. Nature is wisdom, sends each child into that proper atmosphere, or that proper conditions in which it can fructify. Provided he is healthy. Human beings also, as a lavish human child is such a helpless child, you can imagine, that at least for the first 5 years, if you don't protect yourself, the child will vanish, perish. Whereas animal baby, within a couple of hours or a couple of days, it can become independent of his parents and move on. Human child requires protection, shelter. But once given proper guidance and shelter, it can shine forth. That is the difference between very intelligent, very good, great people and the world. Of course, some people are born great, as they say. But some, they have made themselves great because they have in them that inherent quality. And they recognized it. And they were true to it. They left their luxurious job and went into their own thing. A fellow can leave his job of electronics and go for photography because that is what he loves. So, and then he can shine out in that. Or he can become a sculptor, he can become a good cook. The other day I came across my little girl and she was so much interested in that television cookery was shown. And she was looking with great interest. And I asked her, she says, yes, I love cooking and I love eating both. Now, this is a channelizing energy in the child. Out of that, a creative things can unfold itself. So, human beings require help, of course. And unaided human beings also can fail. And therefore, we require good educationists. Educationists who are sensitive. Educationists who can make us aware of our inherent nature. That is why in Gurukul, a guru used to keep pupils, a small group of pupils. One coming from beggars, one coming from, even the most therefore, coming from Kshatriyas, from Brahmins, from Vaishyas, all children of those qualities. And the guru will see that although he is born a Vaishya, he has got the Brahmin quality. This fellow is born a Kshatriya, but he is born a Vaishya. He is born like a chariot. So he has got a sense of knowing things and therefore guiding the child in the child. This is a kind of education that we have in those days. That's when, because they are small class. And the guru was like a pitri, like his father, greater than his own father. And guru mother, who was so lovingly taking care of them. And that was the way unfoldment used to take place in those ancient times. And therefore great beings used to be born and used to be created and men. What has happened in our present education, as you know, has now become completely mechanized and commercialized. If it is mechanized, it is all right, but if it is mechanized, commercialized, it is much worse. the very entry point. So called KG classes, take something so that you get an entry into prestigious school. Otherwise, you have to let go with your ordinary common student school, income schools. The very starting point is value. Till up to the higher level of graduation, the super graduation, and so on. It's a very sad story. We don't go into it. But this is what is about. That human being as in him, let us be proud. That Eric Fromm says that one place, that man does not have realized that how great he is in his own true nature. That he has in him untold faculties lying wasteful. Given an opportunity, it can shine. Opportunities are there, but sometimes we have to create that opportunity. The parents and the education should have the sensitivity to know that this being is not that particular inclination. And that sometimes is a misfit. One of the reasons why most people are unhappy with their life is that they are misfits. They are misfits in that proper place where they ought to be. I think we are almost coming to an end, and then we can end it. I think we go no better than going back to our Guru Nanak. I mean, we love it. But another place Guru Nanak says that, you know, why we are slowly progressing or not so shining forth. He says, only look at your own shadow. It's a very beautiful place. Look at your own shadow. Your shadow will always remain in front of you when you are walking with the sun at your back. But, dear me, for one moment turn your own face towards the sun and see, where is the shadow? It's not like that. For here the shadow is the outer man. The mere shadow is me. So we are always involved, as we said, involution. We are involved with the materiality, our personal concerns, and to the extent that we can draw ourselves out of it, we can shine from. And then to begin with, we must be, what shall I say, sensitive. We must become aware. We will become aware of what is there in us. This awareness will come, which will also bring about communion between our lower nature and higher nature. And talking about communion, I think we should go to the last two readings before we end. The spiritual ego can act only when the personal ego is balanced. Only when the personal ego is, the ego, the sense of I, when the personal sense of I is paralyzed, then the spiritual ego can come forth. Now it always happens when we go into deep sleep condition, our body and the brain is silent, sleeping, then the real man awakens. And in the Sushupti state, the real man talks to us. The real man sends us a message. The real man pats us, soothes us. Our frayed nose, which is a tired soul, which is tired through the tribulations of life, it pats us, it, like a mother. It consoles us. This is in the state of. That's why when we get up fresh, we feel refreshed, physically as well as spiritually. But this takes place when the outer man is well. The spiritual I man inherently is omniscient and has every knowledge in him. Well, the personal self, the outer man, is the creature of his environment and the slave of his physical memory. So because he is slave of his physical memory, involved with his physical things, he is not, you cannot paralyze him. But then communication can yet take place. So second line says, but are there no modes of communication between the spiritual and the human consciousness or memory? Then of course there are. To what do you attribute intuition, the voice of the conscience, the premonition, the vague undefined reminiscences, etc., etc., if not to such communications? In other words, we have become aware that there is a possibility of the communion and then coming a little closer to our real inner center. By keeping our talkative mind for a while silent. From time to time, sit down and keep the mind silent. It is very talkative. Allowing the inner voice to speak. At least, in the very act of silencing the mind, give a kind of relaxation and peace in sense. That's why nowadays this modern yoga exercises and most of the yoga institutions now just talk of relax. They call it what is called the shavasana. The man is made to lie down and completely he has not become aware of his body. Forget awareness of his physical status. And only be aware of his own breathing. This is the way to relax physically and mentally. But it is also a way of relaxing spiritually if you are conscious that there is inner and inner center. So this communication can take place by first silencing my mind and becoming aware that there is in man, that there is a central life within. So if at all we take away any lesson today from this today's lecture, the man in his intrinsic nature is a luminous being, is a being of light, that is an immortal entity. And then unfortunately it is caught up in a vehicle which is muddled, which is full of sorrow, which is full of his own tremendous past, of the memory of his childhood experiences and so on, which comes in the way of this unfoldment and growth. But once liberated and self-liberated, because there are self-actualized beings who have overtaken and who are controlled over their own lower nature and are shown forth, and permitted all the beautiful faculties to come forth. They are called the self-actualized beings according to Dr. Maslow. There are certain 10% of, we found out statistically in the postgraduate level, that 10% of them have this quality of being independent of environment and allowing their own inner faculty, and they are spontaneous, not enslaved by external pressures that are bombarding on them. Not at all allowing the prejudice of informations and dictates of advertising media and so on to come in and impinging on their mind, independent on their own. I think we have 3 minutes for answering questions.
So,
sir,
today, this theme is the name of fallen angel, right?
Yeah.
Fallen angel, if I read it in between the lines, does it mean that a person, human being who's fallen from, who's come down from heaven, so you mean it's that fallen, or is it something which is derogatory, means human being fallen in the eyes of mankind? That is one. And second one is, you may find it silly or amusing, the audience may find it silly or amusing. But the second question is, when we are distinguishing a man, a person, a human being and an animal, of course I have asked this before also, but I have not got a convincing reply. Does a man who eats non-vegetarian food, is he considered to be an animal? Can we say that he is not practicing non-violence?
That's it. The first question is that fallen angel is a word can be used sensibly and also not so sensibly. The religious people call it fallen angel or fallen man or fallen Adam. Because he so-called was tempted to eat the apple and so on, and therefore he disobeyed the law of nature, the law of God. God told him, don't touch it and he touched me, because whispering of a serpent took place and so on, the whole story. So in that sense, he was born an angel, or made an angelic being, and yet he fell, according to the church belief.
So that means in what sense? I didn't get you.
It is in the religious sense that he has fallen. But you are right, that he was really a sparkling light. But because he has gone down on the earth, he has condensed himself and he has to pass through the lower vehicles, it appears that he has fallen. In that sense, he got himself involved. And in that involvement, he has forgotten his home.
So that's a bit of derogatory, right? It's
the first one is derogatory. The man is low, the man is born in sin, the man is a sinner, and he can never improve.
Yeah.
And in that sense, derogatory. Here it is a resting of man to fall. But then he has not left himself. The whole nature is trying to help him to come from the lower kingdom up to human, from human to the superhuman. There is a tremendous impulse. He is imprinted on man, it is called evolutionary impulse. He has not lost that impulse, which always makes him salvage the level of the caveman, that he tries to improve himself. So the urge to make oneself better is imprinted in man, is that inherent in man. To that extent, that is true. So, in a higher sense, yes, he is fallen because he was a sparkling light, but now it has become like a clay. But there is a possibility that it has come from, as the Buddha says, from the dust, from the heap of dirt, a lily can also rise. So it is the hope and the possibilities. And about second question, about this vegetarianism, non-vegetarianism, there are two things. Biologically, if your body demands this kind of thing, by all means, obey it. But from time to time, we experiment and try that you may try to be vegetarian out of moral and other social issues. But it does not mean a non-vegetarian cannot be spiritual and a vegetarian is always a spiritual. Spirituality has nothing to do with what you eat. What is more important is what is the kind of quality of thought we are generating. So the true spiritual measure of a man's growth does not depend upon what is the quality. Of course, it does depend upon the daily way in which he eats. Even if it is a vegetarian, when he eats in an ugly way, the animal way, a greedy way, grabby way, certainly he is worse than animal. A man who eats meat or fish, but just in his own natural way, scientifically, with the care of his own body. So you give to it or eat to it. That is
but
the
is he practicing non-violence? If he is eating non-violence, is he practicing non-violence?
He may practice non-violence, at least in human relationship. He may eat meat, but he can be extremely courteous with you. He may be trying to defend you. He may be a warrior, but he will be always on your side. So, a meat eater does not mean thousands and thousands of people are meat eaters, but some of them are very great and great thinkers. Among the great men, they have been non-vegetarians, but they are heroic in many other ways. So, eating food has not much to do. One depends upon the kind of food that we take at our mind level. That is one. This is answer. We do not give much emphasis to food. We give great, it is important. But you have to see to your own instinct, your bodily instincts. You know, some body will need it. And therefore, it may be promising.
Thank you, sir.